Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle, and you know us. We are your friendly people dashboard that's helping you pull together all of the data from all of those different HR systems that you're using, your HRIS, ATS, engagement, performance, employer brand. Stop pulling together all those messy, crappy spreadsheets and not getting all the value that you need, and instead use Employee Cycle to put all that data into one place, so that you can spend all your time actually understanding what that data is telling you. But that's enough about me and Employee Cycle, because we have a very special guest on the show. And so please help me welcome Jerome Turnick, CEO of Smart Recruiters. And today we're going to discuss how recruiters can step up during times of uncertainty. Jerome, welcome to the podcast.
Woo! Jerome, welcome! Yeah.
Thank you for having me, Bruce. It's a real pleasure.
Awesome. So, Jerome, I would like to ask you the question that we always ask, which is, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
I was 22, and I wanted to create a company. And I was born and raised in France, and there weren't a lot of entrepreneurial opportunities in France at the time. So I took my car, I went to Prague in the Czech Republic, which was just after the Berlin Wall fell. And I was asking people around, like, what can you do in this country? And they're like, yeah, you can do anything. Like, there's everything to be built, but gee, it's hard to find good people. And I didn't have any startup capital, so I figured, I wasn't going to get into the telecoms business. And so I started a recruitment agency. I started hiring Czech people for multinational companies, and that's it. Fast forward a few years, I've grew up a nice little recruitment agency in Central Europe, sold that, and then moved to London, started one of the first applicant tracking system, funded by Accenture and others some years ago. I realized that applicant tracking systems really don't make hiring more easier. And so in 2011, I moved to San Francisco and I started Smart Recruiters, which is a talent acquisition suite that delivers hiring success for over 4,000 companies around the world nowadays.
Awesome. So Jerome, let's bring it back to our topic. And that is how recruiters can step up during times of uncertainty. So if we go pre-COVID, and just to give a timestamp, today is July 6th. If we go pre-COVID, what did you believe was the current or was the status of the recruiter, the perception of the recruiter, before we talk about how they can step up?
I think recruiters are one of the functions in corporates that is most misunderstood. I think recruiters, and that hasn't changed, by the way, with COVID, but I think recruiters are being measured by the wrong metrics, cost per hire, time to fill, faster and cheaper, which actually make no sense in the world of recruiting, right? Because you're as a recruiter, you're here to hire amazing talent. And guess what? That's actually what the CEO wants, right? So the CEO wakes up every morning and she thinks, I need to hire the best people in my industry. I need to have the best team for my startup. So the CEO is focused on the value creation by recruiting, but then somehow we're just, the evolved version of a staffing function whose job is to put butts in seats, and we're measured by faster and cheaper. And that doesn't make sense. And so I think recruiters are in this difficult position today that they drive massive impacts to their companies, because who you hire kind of defines everything, right? You are who you hire as a company, as an organization. Hell, as a hiring manager, who you hire defines you as a leader, right? So recruiters deliver amazing value and impact to companies, but they are measured by the wrong metrics and they are not regarded at the level that they should be. And I think this is this is one of the things where recruiters can and should step up, and which we're helping rephrase that paradigm or change that paradigm to why we call it hiring success as opposed to, you know, staffing or recruiting or talent acquisition. And really, it's like, what is your ability to hire amazing talent in an organization? And that's what the CEO wants.
That's pretty fascinating, especially being the CEO of a people dashboard company where we're looking to make companies more action and data driven when it comes to their people data. So if those are the wrong metrics to track, then what are the right metrics to track, assuming that you believe that recruiters should be held to some standard or benchmark driven by data in the first place?
Well, they definitely should, right? They absolutely should. Otherwise, you know, if you can't measure, well, why would you invest, right? So the correct metrics for recruiting are, we call this the hiring success scorecard. And there are three metrics: time, quality, and cost, which are a good way to measure any function, frankly. So you're going to measure cost, not in cost per hire, because nobody has ever been to a management meeting saying, hey, Bruce, I want to increase our cost per hire next year, right? You would get fired for saying that. But you measure your hiring budget as total cost of recruiting divided by the salary of new hires. Now you're saying, hey, Bruce, we're investing 5% of our new hire salary in recruiting. You know what? It's kind of on the low side compared to industry benchmark. And so if we're under-investing in recruiting, we're not going to get great. So now you're in an investment conversation. So hiring budget. Second, you don't measure time to fill, because it's like, hey, Bruce, my time to fill is 57 days. You're like, I don't care, like start earlier, right? Instead, you measure hiring velocity, which is the percentage of positions that are filled on time. And now if I tell you, hey, Bruce, you know our hiring velocity is 85%, it means that if you decide to invade Texas, then 85% of the soldiers are going to be there on the day of the invasion, right? If you decide to build a new product, you're going to have 85% of the developers you need. Or if you're opening a store, you're going to have 85% of the merchandisers. So you translate hiring velocity and business velocity. That's your second measure. And your third measure is a measure of quality. And quality of hire can be measured 7 years later when you see the career progression of the guy you hired 7 years ago, but nobody does that properly. So we've introduced a net hiring score, which is an NPS-like score for new hires. So 90 days into a hire, you ask the candidate on a scale of 1 to 10, how much of a fit is this job? And you ask the manager on a scale of 1 to 10, how much of a fit is this new hire for you? And then just like an NPS, you take the 9 and 10s minus the 1 to 5. And that gives you a positive, negative score that actually tells you if you are hiring more great people than poor fits. Those three things, net hiring score, hiring velocity, and hiring budget, if you start to measure yourself as a recruiter on those three metrics, I guarantee you'll have very, very interesting conversation with your CEO, because they'll be like, wait, if I give you a bit more money, how far could you take the net hiring score and the hiring velocity?
This net hiring score concept is really intriguing to me, again, as we're trying to help companies better understand which metrics to track. When it comes to the net hiring score, is this like a pulse survey, like NPS, where you are constantly or consistently pulsing someone on a specific cadence, so maybe once a year, twice a year, three times a year, so that you can always tie and attribute the success of that employee back to the recruiting source in the recruiting process? How does that work?
Yeah, it actually, we recommend you do it at the 90-day mark for permanent position, right? You could do it earlier for hourly positions, obviously, and then you could do it again at the 180-day mark. After that, you're probably into the regular day-to-day of the job, right? So twice at the 90-day, 180-day mark is the right cadence in my mind. And you can see how it evolves. And what's really interesting is who owns those metrics. And when, because historically, you're saying, like, just like now, we're like, oh, these are metrics to measure recruiters. Oh, really? Are these metrics to measure recruiters, or are these metrics to measure your VP engineering? Like, if this person is not able to hire engineers, like, what good is that person to you? So is this a metric for the business, or is this a metric for the recruiter? Is the fact that I couldn't fill my jobs actually my fault as a manager or my fault as a recruiter? And we're seeing more and more companies flip this metrics on their head and give the hiring velocity to the manager. So the manager is in charge of making sure that they actually hire people on time. So it's their job to move fast. And they give the net hiring score to the recruiter, and so that it's the recruiter's job to actually get great hires. And in fact, that completely changes the dynamic, because now the manager is like, I need to go faster, like let's move people through the funnel. So they're accelerating the process. Meanwhile, the recruiter is like, wait. I agree with you, this is a good candidate. Maybe we could find a better one, right? So they become the bar raiser, right? And you're not measuring. If you measure your recruiters by fast and cheap, you're just, effectively, this is a race to the bottom. So the wrong metrics lead to the wrong behavior. Change the metrics, give the metrics velocity to the lead, to the manager, quality to the recruiter, and now you have a really good relationship and the essence of a good function right there.
Interesting. So let's just say if I am an executive or I'm part of the HR team and I want my recruiter to step up their game, especially during these challenging times and times of uncertainty, or I'm a recruiter and I'm hanging on to every word you're saying right now because you're totally changing the way that I could potentially do my job, how do I actually step my game up and become better and more valuable during times of uncertainty?
So I think for one, times when hiring volumes are low are perfect to actually optimize your processes, your technology, rethink your metrics, right? So if I am a recruiter, head of TA in an organization that's on hiring pause or slow hiring right now, I step up to actually upgrade my function. I step up to say, you know what, actually, if we're not hiring much, this is my opportunity. Like for the last 5 years, I've been busy filling wrecks. The one thing that I did not have is time. Right now, I have time. And so is it a time to actually revamp your technology? So if you're running on an outdated applicant tracking system, you know, candidates don't like using it, managers stay away from it, your recruiters aren't happy because they don't have all their data in one system. Like, is this time to upgrade? Because, you know, like your ATS is like the engine of a car, right? If you upgrade, it's much easier if the car is parked. So you actually can think about, do I upgrade my technology? Can I reframe the metrics conversation? Is this now actually a good time to think about metrics conversation or about upgrading my processes? So if you are a TA manager or a solo recruiter in an organization, think about how can you use this time to improve yourself and to improve your function. That would be one thing that you can do. And there are many more, but this one is where I would start.
So you're speaking to the heart and soul of recruiters who are listening to this. If they wanted a practical plan and strategy for ground zero, and they're saying, all right, our company has either put a freeze on hiring or we're hiring much less, and I want to do some of these things that you're talking about, Jerome, where do I start and how do I prioritize what's going to get me the quick win and also put us in the best position moving forward?
I think you start by defining where you want to go. And the metrics and the overall hiring success methodology that I described earlier is a good place to start. There are other methodologies, but this one, I think, represents a good place to start. You go to hiringsuccess.com. You can download the definitive guide for hiring success, which will give you, 200 pages of ideas and initiatives of how to transform yourself and how to calculate those metrics. So you can educate there. You have the Hiring Success Masterclass that you can take free. And there's like 6 masterclasses, 2 hours each. You get certified at the end, really good use of your time as well. And you have a book that I published in February, the Hiring Success book, which is a good read for the CEO. It's really a book for the CEOs, like, oh, you want to hire Mr. or Mrs. CEO? You want to hire the best talent in your market? Yeah, well, read this book. This is how to do it. And this actually will trigger the right conversation with your CEO. So in that order, I would say if you want to dig deeper into the hiring success methodology, use that. Second, realize that whatever you're going to propose has to save the money, has to save the company money. So don't prepare a financial business case, like a proper business case for any transformation that you're doing, and say, this is going to save us money, this is going to improve us. Like, leave your, hey, the candidate experience is going to become, but like all the soft savings, I'm going to build our brand, all of these things are great, but in times of crisis, in times of slow hiring, the C-suite is really focused on efficiency gains and cost savings. So build your business case with that in mind. Hey, we're going to invest in CRM, and by driving a better marketing campaign, we're going to be able to be less reliant on direct sourcing, LinkedIn licenses, and expensive sourcers. And so we could actually shift some of our budget and scale better with a better way to source candidates. Great. We're going to change our ATS because right now our ATS converts 5% of incoming traffic, and the newer version of ATSs, they convert 20%, which means we're going to spend less money advertising jobs and we're going to get better quality candidates. Great. You know, and I can take, you know, the list goes on and on and on of initiatives that you could take, but they all have to be in the light of how you save money, how you save the company money, like hard dollars. Otherwise, it's going to be difficult to push it through.
Where do you see most companies wasting money in their hiring and recruiting process?
They're being cheap. They're being cheap. They don't invest in recruiting, and they end up hiring mediocre talent. I mean, if you, and this is against what I just told you about hard savings, but the hard reality is an amazing software developer can do the job of five developers, right? An amazing salesperson can sell three times more than a regular one. Like, time and time again, productivity by talent, performance has been proven. And yet companies don't invest in recruiting to hire the best talent. Like, I think the only question that a manager should be asking a recruiter when they interview a candidate is like, oh, I interviewed this candidate yesterday. I love this person. I absolutely want to hire her. Next question. Do you think we could find a better one? Like, the thrive towards high quality hire is not there. Companies are wasting a lot of money by not optimizing for hiring. If you hire the best talent, you are the best company. Right? At the end of the day, what is the difference between McKinsey and your next door consulting firm? What's the difference between Goldman Sachs and your next door investment bank? What's the difference between Google and Motorola? Like, this is the people. People make the difference. So this is where CEOs waste the most money. Recruiters, they spend money in direct sourcing, I think is a big area of gain. Like a LinkedIn recruiter is like a phone book, right? So we're basically hiring dialers to phone out to candidates. That's an area of savings. Job advertising and conversions is an area of savings. Wasting candidates in the process is an area of savings. So there's a good amount. I don't have the link here, but if you go to thehiringsuccess.com, you also there have a business case calculator that gives you like a spreadsheet with all the areas of savings. So it's a pretty turnkey methodology.
And just to clarify for anybody who's listening, are you saying that companies don't invest enough in the recruitment process and in the actual recruiters to get the training to hire the best people possible? Or are you saying that companies are cheap and how much they want to pay for the position, and so they already set recruiters up for failure from the beginning by hiring mediocre talent? Or are you saying they do both?
I think the primary problem is a problem of investing in the recruiting process and looking at recruiting as a sales and marketing function. Then, if I bring to the table an amazing talent and you decide to not hire that person because that person is a bit too expensive, that's a different conversation. But right now, the first job is let's bring in amazing talent and invest in recruiting to hire great talent, just like you invest in marketing to get customers. The return are a no-brainer. Like, no cost of recruiting would actually outweigh the performance that you're going to get from amazing new hires. So for CEOs, if I have one advice, is especially in times of crisis, double your cost per hire if you're going to count it in cost per hire. Like, invest in, go get the best developers from your competition. Now is the time. Right? Go get the best salespeople from your competition. Go get the best reps. Because at all levels, people make a difference. There's two flavors of barista at your Starbucks. The one that gets you to come back tomorrow because she says, hey, Bruce, how are you doing? Do you still want a latte like yesterday? And the other one who looks angry, right? And at all levels, great people make a difference.
Jerome, thank you so much for being such an awesome podcast guest. You have provided so much wisdom, so much knowledge, and I know that people are going to want to reach out to you immediately after and download the Hiring Success Guide and all these other things that we're going to put in the show notes. So I just wanted to thank you again for being such a great podcast guest and for sharing so much information with our audience. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Bruce.
Yeah, sure. So where can people find you and Smart Recruiters online?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn, Jerome Turning. So find me there. Happy to connect. I accept all invitations from HR and recruiting folks, and I'm always happy to engage. And then you find Smart Recruiters on smartrecruiters.com if you fancy a great talent acquisition suite, and all the methodology on hiringsuccess.com if you want to download the guide and learn more about it.
Awesome. And we're definitely going to include all of that in our show notes. So for all you listeners out there, if you enjoyed this episode as much as Jerome and I had creating it, then please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes, because that shows that we are doing a good job and providing great content. Also, if this is the first time you've ever listened to our podcast, and that's because you're already a super fan of Jerome, or you thought that this topic was great, but now you're hungry for more episodes, then please subscribe to the Employee Cycle Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to awesome podcasts. And HR and people leaders out there, please remember to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.